It's a very powerful lesson that a person should ask for siyata deshmaya to help you along in making appropriate decisions. That's part of davening. That sometimes we feel that we need God's assistance to help us along with our inner resolve, even to conduct ourselves properly, because you never know what's going to happen. So we ask for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's assistance. That's Targum Unculus. Take a look at the Ramban on the bottom of page number one. Says Rashi, says the Ramban, Harimosi Adi El Hashem Lashon Shvua. Meirim ani yadi le'el elyon. I am raising my hands to God. And then in line 4, v'chein matzinu b'sifri, matzinu b'chol hatzadikim shemashbi'in et yitzran shelo la'asot. We find this for other tzadikim as well, who take an oath to intensify their fight against what? The yetzer hara. Avram hu omer harimosi yadi el Hashem vehinei kalashon vayorem yemino usmolo el hashamayim vayishava bechei haolam bechei haolam in Daniel. So Daniel does this as well. Then he quotes Targum Unculus. We just read it, but I want to continue with the Ramban on page 2. He offers a third interpretation himself. First he quoted Rashi, then he quoted Unculus. The Hanachon Be'enai, what appears correct in my eyes, says the Ramban, Ki Amar Harimosi Yadi El Hashem Lihiyot Hegdesh V'cherem Lifanav. When an individual gets a prize and wins and has something offered to him, you could say, you have three options. You can take it for yourself. You can what? Reject it completely. Or, what can you do? Take it and give it to God. So when you give it to God, what are you doing? You are makdish it, or more legally, precisely, that's what charamot are. When we say in Kol Nidre, you know, Ushvoi v'charameh. What a charamot? It's at the end of Sefer Vayikra, chapter 27 of Sefer Vayikra. Kol cherem lashem lakohen yihyeh. If I take something and I donate it to the mikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need it. So certain gifts, what the treasurer of the Beit HaMikdash does is he has a public auction, sells it, and then the money is used for the maintenance of the mikdash. The Beis HaMikdash has to be maintained. Got to have it cleaned and so on and so forth. Got to paint it and everything. That costs money. So this is... Or certain charamot are given to the Kohanim. Whatever it is, says the Ramban, Harimoti Yadi El Hashem refers to what? Not to Shvua, not to prayer, but that he is taking it, but dedicating it exclusively and completely unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How does the Ramban see this anywhere in the text? And he cites an expression. It says, Ki ahegdeshot yikru'u kein trumat yad. Trumat yad. In fact, when the Torah tells us that we're supposed to give ma'asar digancha tiroshcha v'yitzarecha and so on and so forth, the last two words of that phrase are utrumat yadecha. It's the pasuk in Parshat Re'eh in Dvarim chapter 12. So utrumat yadecha, says Rashi right this, elu bikurim, refers to bikurim. How does it refer to Bikurim? Because what do you do with Bikurim? You bring them to the Mikdash, you pick them up and wave them, and then who do you give it to? To the Kohen. So it's so the Ramban sees that donations to God are called Harimot Yad. As it says, Kilashon, Komerim Trumat Kesef Unachoshet. Anybody who donated either silver or copper. V'chol ish asher heinif tenufat zahav l'Hashem. And Moshe was thanking anybody who donated gold at that time unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there are three possibilities as to what Avram did. Either he took an oath or a shvuah. Sfarno says it was a neder, not a shvuah. And in fact, Rashi in his augmented commentary also says it was a neder, not a shvuah. It really makes no difference. A second interpretation is Onkelos, that he prayed to God to strengthen his own resolve. And the third interpretation is the Ramban, that he indeed took it. But what did he do? I'm not keeping it for myself. I give all of it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not so generous. I always tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what? If I win the lottery tonight, which is 121 million, I get 50%. I'm not even 100%. That's all. Yeah. That's very interesting. Maybe there's a parallel. Good. Very nice. Maybe there's a parallel that just as in relationship to Malki Tzedek, he invokes Hashem El Elyon Konei Shemayim Va'aretz. And what did he do? Vayitein lo et ma'asar mikol. So too, when he invokes Hashem El Elyon Konei Shemayim Va'aretz, what's he doing? He's giving some type of ma'aser. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Now, the Midrash is loaded with statements about this text used by Avram. Harimosi Yadel Elyon, if I'll take anything, Imichut V'atzrochna. Dozens of Midrashim. They were so impressed with Avram's statement. So on the bottom of page number 2, take... Yes. Ah, good. That's an excellent point. Normally you would say, I'm not taking a diamond ring, nor will I take even what? A shoelace. Here he's using what? I won't take a thread. Or, okay, that's kind of repetition. That's one of the things that leads the Midrash to what you'll see in 2 seconds. Right. What's the gap? Right? It's a good question. We'll see. So take a look at the bottom of page 2, the last line. Davar Acher. This is lifted from a Midrash. Avraham Amar Harimosi Yadi El Hashem. Zacha V'yatza Mimenu Moshe. Shine Emar Elohei Avi Ve'arom Mimenu. Look how the Midrash is playing on words. That's what a Midrash does. Here you have the word Harimoti, which means he what? I raised my hands. What does Moshe say in the Shira? He says, Ze Eli va'anvehu, Elohei Avi va'aromimenu. What does aromimenu mean? I will raise God, exalt God. So, as a result of Avram raising his hands to God, he was privileged to have a descendant by the name of Moshe, who is his great-grandson, a great-grandson of great-great-great-grandson, 6 generations later is Moshe, and he will use the expression, Elohei Avi V'arom Imenu. You pray to God, and what will now happen? Your great-grandson will pray, not only pray to God, exalt, raise HaKadosh Baruch Hu's esteem in the eyes of the entire world. So that's one comment which the Midrash makes, amongst many being so impressed about Avram. However, he says, in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Im Michut V'Atzroch Na, V'imekach mikol ha-shelach. Says Rashi. Let's take a look at Rashi first. Im michut na'a, im michut v'atzroch na'a. A'akev la'atzmi min ha-shevi. I'm taking an oath, for example, according to Rashi, that I will not allow myself to take anything from that which was captive. That's number one. Now, perhaps that which was taken captive would not be terribly significant. I don't know about you, but if I were going out to war and I had precious jewelry, I don't think I'd be wearing it during the course of war. Why? Because anything could happen. You don't wear a tuxedo when you go to a war. You wear appropriate clothing, and you're not necessarily adorned with jewelry. So what exact? And you're not going to come with a wallet and 68 credit cards in a war. So what's the big deal that he was such a gracious tzaddik that he said, you know what, I won't take anything from the Chevy, from that which is taken captive. What do you think these guys have when they were taken captive? Just give me 2 seconds. 2 seconds. So then Rashi claims, just playing Rashi out, that's why he says statement number two, V'im ekach mikol ha-shelach. If I were to take anything that you legally own, says Rashi, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? V'im tomar latet li schar mibeit ginozayich. You know what? I know that I don't have nothing terribly valuable here on the war bat, on the war front. But where do I have lots of stuff? In my treasury department. In my palace, I got tons of things. I got lots of money and gold and silver and jewelry all locked up. Says Avram, even if you should offer me what? Something from your treasury department, I'm not interested in that either. So the two phrases, according to Rashi, are one, that I am taking an oath, I'm not going to take anything that you have to have currently on you, min ha-shevi. Number two, and the proof is that it's called a Chevy. It's not a Lexus, it's not it's a Chevy. You know, that's what you call it. That's the symbol of it. It's not a Caddy or anything like that. You know, not a Porsche. It's just a plain Chevy. What?
I said keep your day job.
That is my day job. This is part of my day job. So. Why? You don't have any desire to drive one of those cars? The fancy one? When I taught in Hillel, I always tell the story. When I taught in Hillel, so the Israeli representatives used to come to try to recruit some of the kids to come to Israel. They walk in, they come into my office, and they say, this doesn't look like a yeshiva high school, this looks like a corporate headquarters. I said, because you're parked in the student's lot. If you come to the faculty lot, you see my Chevy, 20 years old, you'll understand this is a faculty lot. This is a yeshiva high school. Because every one of those kids, when they were 17, got handed the keys to a brand new midget Mercedes, and several of them had a Porsche. And I had this temptation. I told one kid, I'm going to fail him unless he lets me drive. And it's actually a very nice drive. I must say. It's not worth $68,000, but it's a very pleasant drive, I must say. I took it for a spin on Route 18, right next door to Beale. Fine. So that's what he says. V'lo tomar, says Rashi, continuing, ani ha'esharti es Avram. I don't want you to have the pleasure of saying, I, Sodom, Melech Sodom, made Avram rich. Why? Shehakodesh Baruch Hu, who hivtichani le'ashreini? God already promised to make me a rich man. Shene emar va'avarechecha. We saw it at the beginning of the year. What is, how does Rashi say, va'avarechecha b'mamon? That you're going to be blessed with enormous resources. I don't need you. I don't need you. Yes, question.
Okay,
even better. Yeah.
When a soldier goes to war, he has all he has on him are his clothes and his shoes.
I know, that's it.
Arms, his sword, his shoes.
Yes.
If you take away a soldier's shoes, or his clothes, that's a big thing.
Okay. Nah, that's not as a gift to somebody for saying thank you. You know, and what are his shoes going to be worth? You know, that's not
the... To the soldier?
Yeah, to the soldier it is, but it's to Avraham, what does he need him for? Yeah.
I think from previous experience, people have it and doesn't matter if it's a soldier or a civilian, if he has any kind of value, then he should be captured. He has something to trade for.
Correct, but Avram is not looking in for taking any.
I'm talking about the soldiers.
What is the soldier in a position to bargain for?
I don't know.
He's taken captive. He was taken captive.
Yeah, so if he has something, he could trade maybe with the who's taking care of him.
Yeah, but what does he have?
I don't know. I came to research it.
Okay. No problem.
During the war, you trade something.
Yes.
Even a piece of shoe.
Yes. If it means something to your captor, then it would be worth something. Yes. But if you're trying to negotiate release, and all you got to do is say, "Here's my shirt," you know, say, yeah, "I'll keep you. I'll keep you in captivity."
This lady said, "A shoe or a pair of shoes during the war." When I come, so
yeah, I'm not making light of a pair of shoes. I'm not. So, take a look at page 3, and here Chazal in the Midrash go wild with the symbolism of that which Avram selected. Chut and srochna, a piece of cloth, a thread, and shoelaces. Says the Gemara in Maseches Chulin, on the top of the page, in michut v'atsrochna, zachu banav, l'shtei mitzvot. Based on saying that I will not take a thread or shoelaces, they were zoche to be to mitzvot. Chut shel tchelet, the thread of blue, dyed blue, which is on the tzitzis. Uritzu'ah, the strap of what? Of tefillin. So, you know, he says, Bishlama ritzua shel tefillin, ksiv vira'u kol ame ha'aretz, kishem Hashem nikra alecha. All of the nations of the world will see that the name of God is imprinted on your forehead. V'tanya Rebbe Lezer HaGadol Omer, Elu tefillin sheberosh. This is the tefillin sheberosh. Elechut shel tcheles mahi. What is the symbolism of the chut shel tcheles? The Sanya Rabbi Meir Omer, ma nishtana tchelet mikol hatzivonim. Why was tchelet selected amongst all of the other colors? In Neshet Chel, everybody knows this in the second grade. But Neshet Chel is doma leyam. V'yam doma lerakia. V'rakia doma le'evan sapir. V'evan sapir doma lekisei hakavod. So it reminds you of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the mitzvah of tzitzis reminds you of all mitzvot and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara actually believes that there is some connection between that which Avram does here and these two specific mitzvot. The mitzvah of tefillin as well as the mitzvah of tzitzis. And there are several explanations to this Gemara. I'll give you one or two. What Avram is doing here is as Shem, Malki Tzedek, blessed him 5 seconds ago. Namely, what is the task of man on this world? To bring the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu onto this world. So that every citizen of the planet recognizes who the true God is. That's man's tachlit. So that any time we do something, if a person will notice it, what will happen? They will say, that must be a student of God. The Gemara illustrates this, I think I mentioned this to you, that Rav, when he went into the butcher shop, even though he had an account, like everybody else in the butcher shop, a little grocery store with an account, he never put anything on his account. Paid full cash on the spot. Never wanted anybody to suspect that he's not going to pay. He's going to just leave it on credit, check out of town, and that'll be it. Never. So, and then people hopefully will be impressed with him. So here, the wearing of the tefillin sheberosh specifically is that symbol that I acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is God. That's why the tefillin contained the parsha of Shema and the Hayam Shemoa and so on and so forth. And it also contains the two parshiot in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises to give us Eretz Yisrael. And we acknowledge that our right to Israel is God-granted and God-given. It's not our own military strength that is responsible for our connection to Israel. And hopefully that impresses people. The mitzvah of tzitzis is contains a very interesting perspective. Very interesting perspective. The Gemara tells us that Rav Katina, an Amoraic sage, used to have a garment only from rounded edges, not four corners. Why did he wear a garment round? Didn't want to wear tzitzis. Can you imagine? Wanted to exempt himself from wearing tzitzis. Some of his colleagues came over to him and said, what's going to happen to the mitzvah of tzitzis? You'll never wear tzitzis your whole life. This is what you're teaching people? So he barked back and he said, Anshitu a'aseh? You think I deserve a punishment for not performing a mitzvah saseh? Normally, if you don't eat matzah, if you don't sit in the sukkah, nothing happens to you. You just don't get credit for a mitzvah. But what? But you don't get punished. So what do you think? I'll forfeit some reward. It's a very strange state. Very strange state. On the other hand, 5 minutes later, the Gemara quotes an alternate opinion and says that tzitzis is a mitzvah. Rashi quotes it at the end of this week's parsha. So when you listen to the Torah reading, you'll take a peek at Rashi in the last aliyah. It's the maftir of this week's parsha. And Rashi says, Uzachartem et kol mitzvot Hashem, shkula tzitzit kineged kol ha-mitzvot. The value of wearing tzitzis is that it's the equivalent of all mitzvot. All mitzvot. And that's why people, you know, try to train their kids at a relatively young age to wear tzitzis, because it's a very important mitzvah. So there are, it has contradictory philosophy. On the one hand, you don't have to perform it. On the other hand, it's shkula keneged kol ha-mitzvot. So it's designed to teach you an attitude. Tzitzis is not the only mitzvah which you can somehow work your way around it and avoid it. There are many mitzvot that you can do legal gizmos to circumvent. But what should be your attitude to shmirat ha-mitzvot? I want to do it in any event. I want to do it in any event. No one's forcing me. No one's hitting me with a pot over the head. But I want to do this nonetheless. And that's an incredible message that a person should try to communicate. That I am proud of the fact that I'm going to be wearing tzitzis, even though, technically, I don't have to wear a pair of tzitzis the rest of my life. So this particular Gemara claims that Avram, and that fits in incredibly well with Chazal's depiction of Avram. What do they highlight Avram with? What do they highlight? That he observed what? Kol HaTorah Kula, even though he didn't have to observe any of them. Even the Gemara even gives the case, Eruv Tavshilin he made for 2 days Yontif. When he was in Chutz Laaretz, when he was in Mitzrayim for Pesach, he made an Erev Tavshil because he had to observe 2 days Yontif, of course. But not in Israel. That's all. So that fits in. That's Midrash number one. There is another Midrash, which is a little more difficult to explain. Take a look for a second at page 5. There's a Medrash Tanchuma. It's this, the line after I bracket it, because we already saw that comment, in the middle of the line, right after I bracket, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ata Amarta, you just said, Avram, Im Michut V'Atzroch Na, Chayecha, I swear by your life, She'ani Notein Lebanecha Mizbeach, I'm going to give your children a Mizbeach, Shechut Shel Sikra Makifo. There is a little line that is painted in the middle of the Mizbeach, and it's called the Chut HaSikra. Many say it's actually a little thread, which, because there are, without going into details, there are certain korbanot that have to be sprinkled on the top of the Mizbeach, and there are other korbanot that have to be sprinkled on the bottom of the Mizbeach. So in order to guide the Kohanim, what is considered the top and the bottom, there is this Chut HaSikra that completely encircles the Mizbeach, so a Kohen knows when he sprinkles where exactly he has to sprinkle it. So they received that Kishem Shishanu Rabotenu, as our rabbis have taught us. Davar Acher, Ani Noten Lebanecha Mitzvah Shel Chut, Shneemar v'asulahem tzitzit. Va'ad svoch na'al, ani notein lebanecha mitzvat hana'al. Shneemar v'chaltza na'alo. This is terribly, this is talking about chalitza. Chalitza. Where an individual, I said that at the very beginning, Debbie, that it's a, that's why you're here. To offer an explanation for it. That Avram is going to receive, as a result, the mitzvah of chalitza. Where a person who's married, husband dies, they don't have any children, the first directive is that the brother marry his sister-in-law. And hopefully have a child. The child gets the nachala, they name him, and so on and so forth. Fine. Likrot shem al shem hamet. If the brother-in-law is not interested, so then you go through this ceremony, which I must say I witnessed once. It is one of the most degrading ceremonies I have ever seen. If you would not be an observant person, you would say this religion is the most idiotic thing I have ever seen in my whole life.
What does it look like?
It looks like the following. The man puts on a boot which goes all the way up to his knee, and it's tightened with na'al, with the shoelaces, very tight shoelaces. V'cholza na'alo. She has to pull, the sister-in-law has to pull the shoe off from her brother-in-law. V'yarka b'fanav. She has to spit at him. Now the spit is, that's the difficult part. It has to be directly at the face level of the brother-in-law and has to land right by his shoe that she took off. And if you don't get it right, you got to do it again. I'm telling you. I when I was in YU going for smicha, so I asked if anybody would be running or doing, I wanted to see it. So Rabbi Herschel Schachter, his father, Rabbi Elimelech Schachter, had one in YU where he said he invited all the students to come and witness it. And it was not a particularly frum family, and he tried to explain to them, but I could just imagine what was running through their mind. But he was not, it was a member of his congregation, he was not going to let her remarry. Because you're not allowed to remarry. This woman cannot remarry anybody else in the absence of Yibum or Chalitza. She can't marry anybody else. And she wanted to get married to somebody else after her husband died. And he said, I can't allow you to get married. So she had to go through it. But it was, it's just almost impossible to explain intelligently. You know, if you're at least Shomeret Torah Mitzvot, okay, it's a chok. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. We believe in God. He must have a reason for doing this. It's obviously supposed to humiliate the brother-in-law. It's supposed to humiliate him. That's the intention. Because you didn't want to rebuild your brother's house.
But it humiliates the woman also.
I am aware of that. I said I don't understand it. Of all the mitzvot that God would reward Avram for being such a hero, this is what you give him? This, the mitzvah of chalitza? So Debbie, I'm waiting. No, not yet. Ask Mark, he's creative. Yes. Yes, there is. I haven't found that. Yeah, you're supposed to put on your right, put on your left, tie your left, and tie your right. Yes. That's, there's no logic. You don't even need this. There is a Kabbalistic reason for that. There is no reason. The reason is it's supposed to show you that every aspect of your life is determined by Shulchan Aruch. From the minute you're born until the day you die, every aspect of your life is dictated by Shulchan Aruch. Even something such as mundane as tying your shoes. That's all it's designed for. There's no logic for it. Yeah.
First of all, how old does our brother-in-law have to be? Is it anyone above our
mitzvah? Yes. There is one, there are those who say, even a minor. But the halach is, we wait for a brother to become over bar mitzvah in order to give him. Initially it's the elder brother, the oldest brother if there are multiple brothers. Then you go down the list. You want to be miyabim, you want to be miyabim. If all of them say no, we go back to the bechor, the oldest, and he has to give chalitza.
Any widow in today's day and age that has a single brother-in-law has to do chalitza?
That is correct, if she wants to remarry. And if they didn't have any children. Were married, husband died, and no children, must undergo chalitza in order to be eligible to marry any other person. Today, Ashkenazic Jewry does not perform yibum. Never. Because of polygamy. Because if the brother is married, if the brother is not married, you'll have yibum once in a while. But doesn't happen very often. And then, so we always do chalitza. The Sephardic world, in their communities of Syria, Yemen, Morocco, and so forth, they never accepted the ban against having multiple wives. So they practice yibum. They were married and they married a second husband, a second wife. They did that all the time. And in fact, Medinat Yisrael recognized that if they come into the land with a second wife, they can maintain more than one wife. But in Israel, polygamy is prohibited. You cannot marry. Ashkenazic, Sephardic makes no difference. Chassidish makes no difference. It's a state law in Israel. You cannot marry more than one wife. Yes?
Is the ceremony performed in public? Or
no, in a bed, in front of a bed din.
So
you go,
it's not, okay, you're not.
It's not a public affair, but it's...
So maybe this is the opposite from a wedding, that sure, this is what happened. First happened a wedding, and right now I'm free, and if you don't want, so goes all that...
It's tough. I can't explain it.
But if his brother is married, then the woman can get married without him.
No! Even if the brother, because according to Torah law, the Torah law doesn't prohibit polygamy. You can have both.
He has to do chalitza.
He has to do chalitza in order to set her free, to allow her to remarry. A get doesn't work. He has to do chalitza. So it's practiced frequently.
Really?
It is. Because if you have this situation, the mother and the brother and the sister-in-law wants to remarry. That's the only way she can remarry. I'm not saying it happens every day, but it happens.
Rabbi?
Yes? Makes no difference. That is correct. So they'll chalitza. Today, Ashkenazic Jews only do chalitza. In Israel, everybody only does chalitza today. Sephardic or Ashkenazic. But it's a little difficult to understand what was the great reward that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave by saying, okay, you'll pull off the shoe. And you'll spit.
But does anyone explain why Abraham was given that?
I looked around. I didn't find anything intelligent that I could say. You know, when you do Kabbalistic things, I can't even begin to read it.
Because you're saying Mazel Tov with the foot, with the shoe. So maybe this is not.
Okay. All right, we'll stop here, Rabotai, and we'll continue next week. Yes. Oh.